Welcome to Straight Talk, the program where you speak your mind, only on Radio 786.
In 2007, the world was hit by a financial crisis that saw the collapse of large financial institutions, the bailing out of banks, and the downturn in stock markets across the globe. However, the crisis has continued, with governments in Greece and Spain placing austerity measures on its citizens, reducing its spending and increasing taxes to pay back the country's creditors. Now, is that the correct course of action to follow? That is something we will definitely debate during this edition of Straight Talk indeed. So in Straight Talk this evening, just how did these countries land in such a mess? And did major world events, the hosting of these world events, such as the Olympics, the World Cup, soccer, etc., etc., play a role therein? Or what are the other factors, if there are other factors indeed, that places countries and their citizens under such economic pressure? Now, to unravel this, we are joined by international finance critic and former stockbroker himself. We just check if he's online with us. Indeed, he is. Mr. Max Kaiser, welcome to the program, sir.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Max, let's delve straight into the crux of the matter. The current global financial crisis that we are experiencing, can it be considered the worst since the Great Depression of the 1930s?
Well, I think it's very different than any financial crisis that we've seen so far, because what we have now is the emergence of what I call financial terrorists. These are our hedge funds and bankers who wield weapons of mass financial destruction, and they're able to, on an individual basis, create enormous problems. For example, we just saw this last May 6th. There was a 1,000-point drop in the Dow Jones average in New York, and that was the result of a financial terrorist attack, a domestic attack inside the United States against banks and players in the U.S. and around the world. So I think this is the main difference between this crisis and the ones that have preceded it.
Okay. Now, Max, you're making reference to weapons of financial destruction. Would you care to elaborate on that briefly for us?
Yes. Well, because one of the objectives of the policymakers around the world is to keep interest rates as close to zero as possible. This means that hedge funds and banks can borrow money. They can borrow virtually unlimited quantities of money for virtually no cost. This means that if they want to crash the Dow Jones, for example, they can borrow as much money as they need to crash the Dow Jones. And what they do is they will submit sell orders onto the exchange that are not backed by any stock at all. This is called naked short selling. They're selling stock that doesn't exist. Another word for this would be counterfeiting. But the mechanism that creates prices on the exchange can't differentiate between a counterfeit stock and a real stock, so it takes prices down. And if you have unlimited credit, unlimited money, and you've got access to the actual exchange itself, you can crash a market, and you can make money on that crash if you are making negative bets. And so this is the situation that we're in now. At the time, in Washington, they were debating whether or not to pass a bill that would dismantle the so-called too-big-to-fail banks. This is why we had this domestic financial terrorist attack on May 6th in America, because the hedge funds and the banks don't want to be regulated. So they crashed the market by 1,000 points, and sure enough, the lawmakers in Washington did not pass that legislation, and they were unable to stop the rise of the individual financial terrorist.
Now, currencies that are existing across the globe, is it fair to say economically that the reserve banks of any given country is only allowed equitably to print the value of currency that is dictated by the percentage of gold in its stocks?
No, that's false.
So the current...
That hasn't been true going back to 1971 was the last vestige of any gold standard or based monetary standard, but that was ended under Richard Nixon in 1971 because he couldn't afford to pay the cost of the Vietnam War anymore, and France wanted their gold, and France took their gold, and so Nixon destroyed the last vestiges of a gold standard. We have not had any gold standard since 1971.
Now, how closely related is the world banking system to the U.S. banking system? Because it appears as if with its collapse, it triggered a domino effect across the globe.
Well, the world banking system is very closely correlated to the U.S. banking system, and the U.S. banking system is very closely correlated to Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is the number one financial terrorist in the world. They are the Al-Qaeda of Wall Street.
Okay, all right. Goldman Sachs.
Well, no. Goldman Sachs, in other words, if you look at the central banks around the world and the treasury departments around the world, they are populated by alumni from Goldman Sachs. The Federal Reserve Bank has been run periodically by almost exclusively people from Goldman Sachs. The current Treasury Secretary is very tightly associated with Goldman Sachs through the New York Fed, and Goldman Sachs runs many of the governorships, the state governments. They are basically, they're running the Obama administration, the folks like Larry Summers, Tim Geithner, and Ben Bernanke, they all report to Goldman Sachs.
Now, for the benefit of our listeners who are tuned to 100.4 FM Stereo Radio 786, it is our drive time talk show, Straight Talk, your favorite community radio station, also number one in your minds and your hearts. Currently under discussion, the financial crisis that hit us as early back as 2007. Some economists are of the opinion that it hit us way before that. Online also, we have a professional indeed, Mr. Max Kaiser, who will be taking some of our questions, our requests, as well as queries that we might have. So we ask you, look at the dial. Dial the number 021-699-1786. Max, take us through the bursting of the U.S. housing bubble. When that particular bubble burst, did it produce a ripple effect worldwide that we are currently experiencing now?
The housing bubble was the bubble that was inflated after the dot-com bubble formed and burst. And the dot-com bubble was the bubble that was inflated after some of the we saw some of the bubbles appear in other territories outside of the U.S. In other words, the American economy, and by extension the world economy, over the past 30 years survives on creating bubbles. As we know, the workers aren't getting any new jobs. All those jobs are being destroyed. Wages are being destroyed. Productivity in manufacturing capacity is being destroyed. All the economy is being pushed into the financial sector, which is the basically the creation of bubbles and the speculation on bubbles. And as long as interest rates are cheap, then the speculators are able to make money at the expense of workers and savers. This is the true dynamic in the world today. It's a war between savers versus speculators. Speculators want cheap interest rates, and they want access to unlimited amounts of credit, and they don't want to be regulated in any way because they want to be able to crash markets and cause markets to melt up whenever they feel like it. And speculators and hedge funds are much more powerful than any government today. And we're seeing that in Europe right now. Europe is having tremendous problems because the speculators are much more powerful than any government in Europe. And Angela Merkel is now trying to, her primary job is to tackle the speculative accounts attacks on her country. She's being attacked by financial terrorists, and she's trying to figure out how to defend her country and her currency from these financial terrorist attacks. So this is the biggest problem facing anyone in the world who's trying to fight for justice, fair wages, and any kind of savings that they might have in a retirement account. And so the bubble we saw in the real estate market was just part of many bubbles that go back to, as you point out in, earlier, mm. when you went off the gold standard in 1971 mm. is when the bubble economics began, and every decade it's gotten worse and worse, and the amount of debt in the system has increased exponentially. That's mm. why, for example, the total number of debts in the global economy right now is just under $1 quadrillion in dollars. That's $1,000 trillion. Mm. That's the weapons that these speculators have to use to attack countries and attack corporations.
I think very soon our numerical system will not be able to equate to the actual percentage and amount of debt fiscally. But factually speaking,
I'll tell you something. You know, if the Arabs had never invented the number zero,
right.
we would never be in this problem.
Okay, all right. All right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm making a bit of a joke there.
Okay.
But in other words, when you created the zero in the Arab culture 1,000 years ago, you created the capacity to count to these quadrillion levels. Unfortunately, now people like Goldman Sachs mm. are able to use their decimal accounting systems to create weapons of mass financial destruction and to attack any country that they want to attack.
Yeah. Now, factually speaking, Max, what halted prior to 2006? There was a tremendous influx of foreign currency, and there was an easy credit flow that existed in the United States as well as in Europe. But when we reached 2006, it was almost as if this horse that had bolted was completely stopped and it halted. What prevented this horse from bolting even further?
The amount of debt that was stacked up in the system reached a saturation point in the year 2000.
Hmm.
And this is the beginning of the credit crunch and the period of deflation that we are experiencing now. The global economy is experiencing deflation.
Hmm.
Up until 2007, or you could say 2006, from 1982 to 2006, we had global inflation. That period ended. And now, since for the past 2 to 3 years, we have been experiencing deflation. And this deflation will continue now for the foreseeable future.
For the foreseeable future. If we attach a time frame to this foreseeable future, what time frame could we be looking at, Max?
Well, until all of the bad debt is worked out and is worked through the system. So in other words, the global economy has to crash in a big way. What happened in Iceland hmm. in 2007 has to happen to the world, the entire world. You need to have a global crash if you want to get rid of all of the bad debts, and then we can start again. It could take 2 years, or it could take 20 years. You know, Japan has been in a deflationary problem for 20 years, and they're still deflating. In Iceland, it only took 1 year. You know, when I was in Iceland in 2006, I told them point blank that their currency and economy was going to collapse within a year, and I made a film about that. You can see it on YouTube. Mm. It's called Money Geyser, and I speak directly to bankers in Iceland, and I say, in 1 year's time, your currency and your economy will collapse. They didn't believe me, but a year later, that's exactly what happened. And this is what has to happen around the world. It has to collapse because we have to get rid of all the bad debt. You can't get rid of the bad debt by increasing the debt. And that's unfortunately the approach taken in Europe right now. They're trying to fight this debt deflation by adding more debt. And of course, that's like pouring gasoline onto the fire.
Mm.
It won't work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're going to fulfill the roles of prophets of doom here this evening, and we're also going to look at doom and gloom, let's look at a ray of hope. In less than 3 weeks, or approximately 3 weeks from now, South Africa is scheduled to host the largest sporting event on the planet, i.e. the 2010 Soccer World Cup. So much hype has gone into this as well as preparation. In terms of the South African economy, we've been promised that we will receive $5.5 billion. That would stimulate our economy. How far are we from this being a realistic dream?
Well, that's $5.5 billion in debt.
Mm. So that would be negative, not positive to us, eh?
Well, it's debt.
Mm.
You know, debt is, unfortunately, it has to be paid back.
All right, so we've been promised $5.5 billion in debt.
that's right.
Not in accrued revenue. So in hindsight, is this really going to benefit us in just over 3 weeks' time? And when all comes to pass and Brazil, or Bafana Bafana for that matter, South Africa, holds the cup at the end of the one-month period, what would the citizens of this country actually be facing?
Debt payments.
And this is going to be over an extended period. Because if we look at case studies, realistically, Greece, 2004, hosted the Olympic Games. One does not require rocket science actually to understand the meltdown that the Greek economy is currently experiencing. Can we say beyond a shadow of doubt that them hosting the Olympic Games contributed towards this meltdown?
Absolutely.
So how do we prove that? Let's unpack and unravel it. Courtesy of you.
You don't need to prove it. It's a common knowledge.
So take us through it, Max. Take us through it. For the benefit of the listeners, the many thousands tuned into Radio 786 this evening on 100.4 FM Stereo. What are the facts that we can unravel?
In other words, the game is being debt financed. Mm. It only makes sense if you have enough growth as a result of this event to pay off your debt and to also experience some growth beyond the debt payment. But what we're seeing around the world is that that's just not happening. Mm. You know, the debt payments are too onerous, and one of the primary reasons is because governments, for example, in Europe, the banks in Europe have not fully disclosed the amount of debts that they really have on their books. They've been hiding those debts illegally on off-balance sheet accounts. Same thing in the United States. Same thing in Iceland. Same thing in Ireland. All over the world. Now, in South Africa, I cannot say definitively what the local banking community has done. And I won't comment on that because I haven't looked at it that closely. But I will tell you that no economy is separate from the global economy, and the track record of these large, very expensive events is that it simply increases the unsustainable debt load, and the net gain to the local population is just not there.
Mm. Okay, let's focus on the Greek model. Hosted the 2004 Olympic Games, the current status quo, 750 billion euro has been approved as a bailout package that is to stimulate the economies of Spain, Portugal, and case in point, Greece. 27,000 nights have been cancelled, and that is linked directly to the tourism industry, and that is one-fifth of the country's revenue. Daily strikes, marches, riots, etc. by the locals, and these are hundreds of thousands of people. Can we safely say that in and amongst the facts that have been listed on air this evening during the first segment of Straight Talk, that the Olympic Games contributed towards that?
The amount of debts that were accumulated to put on the Olympic Games in Greece, remember, as big as those debts were, the Greek banking system was in possession of many, many, many times more in billions of debts, and they have not even fully said. That's why George Papandreou, the leader of Greece, has just said within the last 2 days that he is going to sue the banks on Wall Street, because he now understands that they were part of the problem in hiding billions and billions in debt. So Greece was victimized by fraudulent accounting, speculative attacks, and hedge funds running rogue without any regulation whatsoever. And the total cost of the Greek games was a cost that unfortunately was not put into the context of the entire country's debt, because the entire country's debt was never known, because those debts were being hidden. The Greek government was working with the banks on Wall Street. It's on record. In 2002, Goldman Sachs put together a debt avoidance scheme. This is in the record. You can look it up for yourself. Billions of dollars. And they did similar program several times during the intervening 10 years. So we don't even know. You can't say that the cost of your project is X, and therefore will it contribute to the overall debt burden, because the overall debt burden is not being fully disclosed by the banks or the government.
Welcome to Straight Talk, the program when you speak your mind, only on Radio 786.
In 2007, the world was hit by a financial crisis that saw the collapse of large financial institutions, the bailing out of banks, and the downturn in stock markets across the globe. However, the crisis has continued, with governments in Greece and Spain placing austerity measures on its citizens, reducing its spending and increasing taxes to pay back the country's creditors. Now, is that the correct course of action to follow? That is something we will definitely debate during this edition of Straight Talk indeed. So in Straight Talk this evening, just how did these countries land in such a mess? And did major world events, the hosting of these world events, such as the Olympics, the World Cup, soccer, etc., etc., play a role therein? Or what are the other factors, if there are other factors indeed, that places countries and their citizens under such economic pressure? Now, to unravel this, we are joined by international finance critic and former stockbroker himself. We just check if he's online with us. Indeed, he is. Mr. Max Kaiser, welcome to the program, sir.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Max, let's delve straight into the crux of the matter. The current global financial crisis that we are experiencing, can it be considered the worst since the Great Depression of the 1930s?
Well, I think it's very different than any financial crisis that we've seen so far, because what we have now is the emergence of what I call financial terrorists. These are our hedge funds and bankers who wield weapons of mass financial destruction, and they're able to, on an individual basis, create enormous problems. For example, we just saw this last May 6th. There was a 1,000-point drop in the Dow Jones average in New York, and that was the result of a financial terrorist attack, a domestic attack inside the United States against banks and players in the U.S. and around the world. So I think this is the main difference between this crisis and the ones that have preceded it.
Okay. Now, Max, you're making reference to weapons of financial destruction. Would you care to elaborate on that briefly for us?
Yes. Well, because one of the objectives of the policymakers around the world is to keep interest rates as close to zero as possible. This means that hedge funds and banks can borrow money. They can borrow virtually unlimited quantities of money for virtually no cost. This means that if they want to crash the Dow Jones, for example, they can borrow as much money as they need to crash the Dow Jones. And what they do is they will submit sell orders onto the exchange that are not backed by any stock at all. This is called naked short selling. They're selling stock that doesn't exist. Another word for this would be counterfeiting. But the mechanism that creates prices on the exchange can't differentiate between a counterfeit stock and a real stock, so it takes prices down. And if you have unlimited credit, unlimited money, and you've got access to the actual exchange itself, you can crash a market, and you can make money on that crash if you are making negative bets. And so this is the situation that we're in now. At the time, in Washington, they were debating whether or not to pass a bill that would dismantle the so-called too-big-to-fail banks. This is why we had this domestic financial terrorist attack on May 6th in America, because the hedge funds and the banks don't want to be regulated. So they crashed the market by 1,000 points, and sure enough, the lawmakers in Washington did not pass that legislation, and they were unable to stop the rise of the individual financial terrorist.
Now, currencies that are existing across the globe, is it fair to say economically that the reserve banks of any given country is only allowed equitably to print the value of currency that is dictated by the percentage of gold in its stocks?
No, that's false.
So the current...
That hasn't been true going back to 1971 was the last vestige of any gold standard or based monetary standard, but that was ended under Richard Nixon in 1971 because he couldn't afford to pay the cost of the Vietnam War anymore, and France wanted their gold, and France took their gold, and so Nixon destroyed the last vestiges of a gold standard. We have not had any gold standard since 1971.
Now, how closely related is the world banking system to the U.S. banking system? Because it appears as if with its collapse, it triggered a domino effect across the globe.
Well, the world banking system is very closely correlated to the U.S. banking system, and the U.S. banking system is very closely correlated to Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is the number one financial terrorist in the world. They are the Al-Qaeda of Wall Street.
Okay, all right. Goldman Sachs.
Well, no. Goldman Sachs, in other words, if you look at the central banks around the world and the treasury departments around the world, they are populated by alumni from Goldman Sachs. The Federal Reserve Bank has been run periodically by almost exclusively people from Goldman Sachs. The current Treasury Secretary is very tightly associated with Goldman Sachs through the New York Fed, and Goldman Sachs runs many of the governorships, the state governments. They are basically, they're running the Obama administration, the folks like Larry Summers, Tim Geithner, and Ben Bernanke, they all report to Goldman Sachs.
Now, for the benefit of our listeners who are tuned to 100.4 FM Stereo Radio 786, it is our Drive Time talk show, Straight Talk, your favorite community radio station, also number one in your minds and your hearts. Currently under discussion, the financial crisis that hit us as early back as 2007. Some economists are of the opinion that it hit us way before that. Online also, we have a professional indeed, Mr. Max Kaiser, who will be taking some of our questions, our requests, as well as queries that we might have. So we ask you, look at the dial. Dial the number 0216991786. Max, take us through the bursting of the U.S. housing bubble. When that particular bubble burst, did it produce a ripple effect worldwide that we are currently experiencing now?
The housing bubble was the bubble that was inflated after the dot-com bubble formed and burst. And the dot-com bubble was the bubble that was inflated after some of the we saw some of the bubbles appear in other territories outside of the U.S. In other words, the American economy, and by extension the world economy, over the past 30 years survives on creating bubbles. As we know, the workers aren't getting any new jobs. All those jobs are being destroyed. Wages are being destroyed. Productivity in manufacturing capacity is being destroyed. All the economy is being pushed into the financial sector, which is basically the creation of bubbles and the speculation on bubbles. And as long as interest rates are cheap, then the speculators are able to make money at the expense of workers and savers. This is the true dynamic in the world today. It's a war between savers versus speculators. Speculators want cheap interest rates, and they want access to unlimited amounts of credit, and they don't want to be regulated in any way because they want to be able to crash markets and cause markets to melt up whenever they feel like it. And speculators and hedge funds are much more powerful than any government today. And we're seeing that in Europe right now. Europe is having tremendous problems because the speculators are much more powerful than any government in Europe. And Angela Merkel is now trying to, her primary job is to tackle the speculative accounts attacks on her country. She's being attacked by financial terrorists, and she's trying to figure out how to defend her country and her currency from these financial terrorist attacks. So this is the biggest problem facing anyone in the world who's trying to fight for justice, fair wages, and any kind of savings that they might have in a retirement account. And so the bubble we saw in the real estate market was just part of the many bubbles that go back to, as you point out in, earlier, when you went off the gold standard in 1971 is when the bubble economics began, and every decade it's gotten worse and worse, and the amount of debt in the system has increased exponentially. That's why, for example, the total number of debts in the global economy right now is just under $1 quadrillion in dollars. That's $1,000 trillion. That's the weapons that these speculators have to use to attack countries and attack corporations.
I think very soon our numerical system will not be able to equate to the actual percentage and amount of debt fiscally. But factually speaking,
I'll tell you something. You know, if the Arabs had never invented the number zero, we would never be in this problem.
Okay, all right. All right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm making a bit of a joke there.
Okay.
But in other words, when you created the zero in the Arab culture 1,000 years ago, you created the capacity to count to these quadrillion levels. Unfortunately, now, people like Goldman Sachs are able to use their decimal accounting systems to create weapons of mass financial destruction and to attack any country that they want to attack.
Yeah. Now, factually speaking, Max, what halted? Prior to 2006, there was a tremendous influx of foreign currency, and there was an easy credit flow that existed in the United States as well as in Europe. But when we reached 2006, it was almost as if this horse that had bolted was completely stopped and it halted. What prevented this horse from bolting even further?
The amount of debt that was stacked up in the system reached a saturation point in the year 2000. And this is the beginning of the credit crunch and the period of deflation that we are experiencing now. The global economy is experiencing deflation. Up until 2007, or you could say 2006, from 1982 to 2006, we had global inflation. That period ended. And now, since for the past 2 to 3 years, we have been experiencing deflation. And this deflation will continue now for the foreseeable future.
For the foreseeable future. If we attach a time frame to this foreseeable future, what time frame could we be looking at, Max?
Well, until all of the bad debt is worked out and is worked through the system. So in other words, the global economy has to crash in a big way. What happened in Iceland in 2007 has to happen to the world, the entire world. You need to have a global crash if you want to get rid of all of the bad debts, and then we can start again. It could take 2 years, or it could take 20 years. You know, Japan has been in a deflationary problem for 20 years, and they're still deflating. In Iceland, it only took 1 year. You know, when I was in Iceland in 2006, I told them point blank that their currency and economy was going to collapse within a year, and I made a film about that. You can see it on YouTube. It's called Money Geyser, and I speak directly to bankers in Iceland, and I say, in 1 year's time, your currency and your economy will collapse. They didn't believe me, but a year later, that's exactly what happened. And this is what has to happen around the world. It has to collapse because we have to get rid of all the bad debt. You can't get rid of the bad debt by increasing the debt. And that's unfortunately the approach taken in Europe right now. They're trying to fight this debt deflation by adding more debt. And of course, that's like pouring gasoline onto the fire. It won't work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're going to fulfill the roles of prophets of doom here this evening, and we're also going to look at doom and gloom, let's look at a ray of hope. In less than 3 weeks, or approximately 3 weeks from now, South Africa is scheduled to host the largest sporting event on the planet, i.e. the 2010 Soccer World Cup. So much hype has gone into this as well as preparation. In terms of the South African economy, we've been promised that we will receive $5.5 billion. That would stimulate our economy. How far are we from this being a realistic dream?
Well, that's $5.5 billion in debt.
So that would be negative, not positive to us, eh?
Well, it's debt. You know, debt is, unfortunately, it has to be paid back.
All right, so we've been promised $5.5 billion in debt.
That's right.
Not in accrued revenue. So in hindsight, is this really going to benefit us in just over 3 weeks' time? And when all comes to pass and Brazil, or Bafana Bafana for that matter, South Africa, holds the cup at the end of the one-month period, what would the citizens of this country actually be facing?
Debt payments.
And this is going to be over an extended period. Because if we look at case studies, realistically, Greece 2004 hosted the Olympic Games. One does not require rocket science actually to understand the meltdown that the Greek economy is currently experiencing. Can we say beyond a shadow of doubt that them hosting the Olympic Games contributed towards this meltdown?
Absolutely.
So how do we prove that? Let's unpack and unravel it. Courtesy of you.
You don't need to prove it. It's a common knowledge.
Mm. So take us through it, Max. Take us through it. For the benefit of the listeners, the many thousands tuned into Radio 786 this evening on 100.4 FM Stereo. What are the facts that we can unravel?
In other words, the game is being debt financed. Mm. It only makes sense if you have enough growth as a result of this event to pay off your debt and to also experience some growth beyond the debt payment. But what we're seeing around the world is that that's just not happening. Mm. You know, the debt payments are too onerous, and one of the primary reasons is because governments, for example, in Europe, the banks in Europe have not fully disclosed the amount of debts that they really have on their books. They've been hiding those debts illegally on off-balance sheet accounts. Same thing in the United States. Same thing in Iceland. Same thing in Ireland. All over the world. Now, in South Africa, I cannot say definitively what the local banking community has done. And I won't comment on that because I haven't looked at it that closely. But I will tell you that no economy is separate from the global economy, and the track record of these large, very expensive events is that it simply increases the unsustainable debt load, and the net gain to the local population is just not there.
Hmm. Okay, let's focus on the Greek model. Hosted the 2004 Olympic Games, the current status quo, 750 billion euro has been approved as a bailout package that is to stimulate the economies of Spain, Portugal, and case in point, Greece. 27,000 nights have been cancelled, and that is linked directly to the tourism industry, and that is one-fifth of the country's revenue. Daily strikes, marches, riots, etc. by the locals, and these are hundreds of thousands of people. Can we safely say that in and amongst the facts that have been listed on air this evening during the first segment of Straight Talk, that the Olympic Games contributed towards that?
The amount of debts that were accumulated to put on the Olympic Games in Greece, remember, as big as those debts were, the Greek banking system was in possession of many, many, many times more in billions of debts, and they have not even fully said. That's why George Papandreou, the leader of Greece, has just said within the last 2 days that he is going to sue the banks on Wall Street, because he now understands that they were part of the problem in hiding billions and billions in debt. So Greece was victimized by fraudulent accounting, speculative attacks, and hedge funds running rogue without any regulation whatsoever. And the total cost of the Greek games was a cost that unfortunately was not put into the context of the entire country's debt, because the entire country's debt was never known, because those debts were being hidden. The Greek government was working with the banks on Wall Street. It's on record. In 2002, Goldman Sachs put together a debt avoidance scheme. This is in the record. You can look it up for yourself. Billions of dollars. And they did similar programs several times during the intervening 10 years. So we don't even know. You can't say that the cost of your project is X, and therefore will it contribute to the overall debt burden, because the overall debt burden is not being fully disclosed by the banks or the government.